This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey. Call the cops. Hey.
This level of foolishness, hey. Enjoy. Hey.
Houston, we have a dog.
I'm just chilling. Hey.
Great ass.
Hey. Damn it.
I'm a very sexy baby.
Hey. Sicario.
Damn it.
You're a clown if you say fuck.
Damn it.
Yeah, people are gonna die.
Yeah, baby.
Heaven is rising. Obama's getting low. McCain should get the vote, 'cause in the 2008 election, the forecast calls for rain.
Yeah,
the first time in history, it's gonna start raining McCain. It's raining McCain. Hallelujah, it's raining McCain. Amen. I'm gonna go out and let myself get.
Welcome to Good Christian Fun. I'm Kevin.
I'm Caroline.
We're going to have good Christian fun.
That's right.
That was a banger from the 2008 election cycle. The McCain girls on YouTube put out a music video called It's Raining McCain.
No. I thought that was an SNL skit for sure.
No.
They love McCain.
That was for real, for real.
I'm going to go get John McCain.
Yeah. I'm going to go out and let myself get absolutely John McCain.
Kevin.
Someone showed that to me for the first time the other night, and I had a religious experience watching it. It's these women that put together a little song for their guy in 2008, you know?
I wonder how they're doing now.
I think they're probably doing as well as he is right now.
Yeah. Sad.
Good Christian Fun is the podcast where we talk about Christian pop culture, the movies, the music, and the entertainment made for, made by, made as a love letter to and from Christians about God and Christianity. But we're not here to make fun of you or to make you go to church. We're just here to be, I don't know, three little American underdogs talking about our faith journeys.
We are but a vessel on the grand gridiron of podcasting.
And why would God give us an idea for a podcast that he wouldn't want us to do?
That's
and
what
record?
I'm saying. That's what I've been yelling to my family and extended family for years. God gave me a dream.
Mm-hmm. I have a dream.
He said, undermine me.
He likes to be challenged. It's one of his love languages. We're talking about the 2021 movie. Or no, was it 2021 or 2022?
This is really important. Make sure you get this right.
Oh gosh, it's 2021. Because it came out It came out against Licorice Pizza in December of 2021.
Oh, remember when everyone was like, should we go see Licorice Pizza tonight or American Underdog?
If you're living in Iowa, you know, home of the eponymous Kurt Warner, the American Underdog, and you're like, all right, I can see Philip Seymour Hoffman's son have a little coming of age moment. Or I can watch a man stock grocery stores and then throw footballs. Perfect spirals.
Easy choice.
That's kind of your programming options.
Mm-hmm.
And
perfect spirals.
America voted. I wonder what made more money between those two movies.
Actually, I don't know.
I'd be curious about this. Okay, American Underdog made $26 million.
Who's got the money?
At the box office. Oh, and Licorice Pizza made 33. Just
pretty
barely
close.
More.
Pretty close. Wow.
That's a lie. It was a limited release, so I get it. But Caroline, we're not two little underdogs alone. We're three.
And well, four if you count this one.
Oh, I know. The littlest underdog of all. But we need to introduce our very special guest first. Friends and folks from the YouTube channel Entertain the Elk and from his podcast of Mice and Men, and monsters?
Give it the hell up for
Adam Tinius!
Hey, dude.
I don't think I'm going to be able to rest until I can go through your opening segment and decipher every single piece of audio.
Oh, sure.
That was in there. My favorites was, she's got a great ass.
Great ass.
And was that Bradley Cooper just saying, hey,
hey, hey, hey, hey. You got
that
it.
Little no. pulsing beat.
It wasn't, you don't need our help. Hey.
It wasn't Bradley Cooper. It was Jackson Maine.
I'm sorry. My mistake.
Adam, buddy.
So happy to be
I think
here.
We
Thanks.
Diagrammed the theme song before and all the drops with the guests.
Oh, yeah.
I remember us doing that a
well,
few months ago.
Well, it changes too, though.
It always
so
changes.
Once you think you know it, you don't.
And isn't that beautiful? Because we're changing all the time too. And
not me.
Okay.
Always the same. Always yep. have been. Always will be.
All right. Time to
An
listen
American
to
underdog.
Audio from you from 2017.
Thank you. That's all right. That's don't true. Do that. That's not fun for anybody. No, thank you.
Ooh, Adam, buddy. Thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm so pumped to talk about this movie.
I'm so excited you're here.
I was saying earlier, I think that you guys took it easy on me because I'm sure from after years of doing this podcast, there's been so much worse just crap that you guys have had to dissect. This wasn't a good movie by any means, but it wasn't like the worst piece of garbage I've ever seen.
This is like our fourth or fifth Irwin Brothers joint. I think, yeah, Mom's Night Out, I can only imagine, I still believe, the Jesus music, this is our fifth Irwin Brothers movie.
Oh, I was going to say, so you watched all their other,
yep.
So you're
Are
completing.
Are we technically fans of the Irwin Brothers now?
I mean, I've seen more of their movies than Scorsese's, percentage-wise.
That you're number one on Letterboxd. They're the ones you've seen the most this year. You're wrapped.
I know.
Irwin Brothers.
Letterboxd rap. Irwin Brothers, thank you. We have not seen October Baby, their 2011 abortion movie.
Yeah.
Starring a young James Austin Johnson.
What?
Of SNL fame and GCF fame.
Yeah. Did we ask him about that?
We did not.
Came on?
We did not.
That makes sense.
He's not really starring. He has a little part.
That
he's
out.
Not like the main character, but yes.
That's a skip.
I was just looking at all the posters because I was looking at their filmography to see what else they've done. And is it a requirement for these kind of movies where it has to be like all the figures are like kind of half capacity? They're kind of fading out like they're dying or something to make right. it seem
Oh, you mean on the
more,
cover art?
All their
sort of
film posters.
A divine light
it's like, yeah, the divine light, angelic light, and they're like fading like they're like dying? Or it's like all their posters look like that.
It's kind of that, well, the Irwin classic move is to make you think all the characters are going to die by the
end
of the movie, and then you're always like, ah.
And then you're hoping that
they were
die.
Like, oh. Some of them do die.
Sometimes they do. I mean, I guess the actual through line with their stuff is based on a real guy. Isn't it interesting?
Yeah,
it's
based on a real guy that's like, is he that interesting?
So,
I guess.
Bart Millard, Jeremy Camp, all the people involved.
Right.
You know, Jesus Music is a
it's
documentary.
It's like they're friends.
It's like
honestly,
these stories need to be told.
Yeah,
right.
No one knows.
People need to hear these stories.
And if you remember, Caroline, we interviewed the Irwin Brothers
did
for the
really?
Jesus Music.
That's right.
Or I did because you couldn't make it. It was a weird. The scheduling worked
they
out.
They were
where
nice.
I interviewed them about their documentary, The Jesus Music, which was basically about the origins of CCM and a lot of it taking place in Southern California in the 70s. And I was asking them some questions and they said, yeah, you know, we just wanted to highlight the dreamers and the entrepreneurs. And we were like, the entrepreneurs?
Oh, yeah, that's
what
right.
we did is I record the interview and then played it for Caroline. And she would just say, pause, and then give
you
her
need
comments
to dissect this.
During-
yeah, it was interesting. You know, it was decent of them to come on. I forgot about that.
It was decent of those Christians to talk.
Right.
Adam, thanks
give
so much
time.
For joining us, buddy.
Adam.
Yeah. Man, you're someone, you're, I would say, one of the rare people I've known longer in this town than even my dear co-host Caroline. Adam and I met each other 14 years ago.
Oh my God.
Oh, in the fall or maybe the winter of 2009. So
yeah, I think I was living in San Diego with my aunt at the time, and I was looking to move up to LA. And I think you were a part of the UTLA program.
That's right,
right?
University of Texas.
And I knew one of our mutual friends who you were rooming with at the time, and I just crashed on the floor as I was applying for stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So that's a long, long time. I met you like when I first got here. Yeah.
And if I remember correctly, Adam's first impression of me is, why is he talking about Miley Cyrus's The Climb so much? Why is he doing that?
Well, that was when you were just some kind of distant voice. I don't think I'd seen you until you came to my apartment and then you I think we just met, and then you dropped and spilled granola.
I brought over some granola for him, and then I spilled it. And I had to
like
pick
a
it up
million
piece by
pieces
piece.
Over my floor that had carpet that would look like granola.
Yes.
And so it was
and
like,
there was no vacuum cleaner because you just moved in. It was a mess.
I think it was our meet cute. It really was our meet cute.
So sweet.
And our destinies were intertwined since then. One of my oldest, dearest friends. But I say all that to say I know a little bit about your history and background with faith, because some of yours is also mine because it's been so much time. But I would love to know from your own perspective, even from when you were a kid and growing up in Texas, your experience of faith to where you are now.
Yeah, so we have to go back to the mean streets of suburb East Dallas.
Ooh. Oh, how'd you survive?
One day at a time. I grew up in a suburb called Mesquite. And yeah, when you grow up in Bible Belt area, as you know, it's just, there's no, especially to a family who my grandfather was a pastor. So my mom was the PK.
Oh, yeah.
And that's just, it's just part of the family,
legacy
but also
family.
It's part of the culture. Like you throw a rock and everyone is Christian, quote unquote, whatever. Everyone's Christian. And so it's just all you know. All your friends are that way. There's like no difference. I don't think I really knew that people who weren't or wouldn't call themselves as Christian. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, grew up going to Southern Baptist Church. And
can I ask how many like of your community, what were there several big churches everyone went to? Did everyone go to one?
God, there's so many churches
that were like,
well, when I was so young, we would drive so far away. And I think it was, we would drive to like downtown Dallas because I guess my parents knew people there. And so you go where obviously where the parents go. And it's the place where the average age is about like 60. Everyone is just like, really old, everyone's wearing suits, you're sitting on pews, no one's like, it's like you could hear like the church mouse, like crickets chirping in there because it's like so quiet.
Yeah.
But there were so many church. I mean, it's like anywhere in Texas, there's a church at every street light, there's so many mega churches. And mine wasn't, man, I don't know. I don't think I'd qualified as a mega church because the actual service itself probably sat 200 maybe, mm-hmm. but the place itself was so much money. It was such a huge church. Yeah. But so that's where we went, grew up, but I don't know. It's interesting when you go and as you're there sitting in the pews, it's really just how do I not be bored and sit here for an hour? And so a lot of it wasn't paying attention because, you know, you don't, it's hard to grasp that stuff as an adult, let alone, oh, the Trinity when you're eight, you're like, what? You're going to live for eternity? What?
And my Trinity is Tony the Tiger.
Captain Crunch.
Captain Crunch.
Video games, Cheetos, Sprite, not going outside ever. And so it was just sitting in pews with me and my brother and my older brother. And so it's also, I don't know if you have a lot of older siblings.
Mm-hmm. I have two older siblings.
So then you guys definitely know whatever they want to do, that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
And so my brother was bored, didn't care. And so it became like, we're bored together now. And now we're playing games on like the envelopes that you tithe with. Like we're doing hangman on there or mm-hmm. drawing.
No, I relate to this too, because I didn't ever go to youth group when I was going to church as a kid. So I was in the main service with my parents being bored to tears, mm-hmm. but that was like preferable to me.
Yeah,
so it sounds like you were
they
also
were at the
not
same time.
In youth group.
So ours was different. It was they had youth group in between two services.
Oh, God.
But also technically wasn't there because, again, my brother, we would get checked in by our parents. And then my brother would leave. And then he would come find me and be like, we're bailing. And so we would just like skip out and we would just walk around.
Wandering?
Yeah. We would just wander around
That's
the
awesome.
Church because my brother just didn't care. And
your
so,
cool.
Yeah, he still hasn't changed. Still so cool. And so it was a lot of that kind of growing up. I feel like I was it was a lot of repeat after me. This is just what we do because
the cultural
this is what we've always done. And there was never, I guess I wasn't getting enough information on myself. And a lot of that was because like I was tuning out and didn't care. It wasn't hitting me, obviously, as a kid at the right time. And so I didn't care to press in to ask questions. My parents weren't doing a lot besides like, let's pray before our meal and before we go to bed. There wasn't a lot of like day to day, let's talk about this or whatever. It was more like chink and you've checked the box or clocked in, clocked out. And so I didn't have a lot of questions. I didn't understand it, but I didn't care to really understand it. It was just is what it is. And
there was nothing happening to you that would make you be like, what is happening? Yeah. What is this? You know, necessarily.
Yeah. And a lot of it's just looking back on it, it feels kind of like you're just kind of going through this, I don't want to say fog, like a negative way, but you are kind of just shoved in directions. Like I was baptized when I was probably 13 or 12. And it was because my grandpa was like on the way out kind of. And it was like, he really wants to see it before like he dies.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was kind of like, okay, I mean, I don't care. I guess I'll get dunked in water. I don't really, again, know what's happening.
I will say, if I'm ever a grandfather, that's not going to be one of my last wishes, is to watch my grandson get wet for God.
Well, I mean, again, it's like he's the pastor. And so he baptized himself, everyone in my family, except me. Because at that time.
So you were like the final boss.
I was the final boss. I was the final thing before he could go on.
He had to get his punch card.
I know. He was like,
he baptized you.
No, he baptized everyone besides me.
Oh, no.
Because he got to the age where he just like couldn't. I probably would have drowned. Like, oh, all right, just stay under there. Go to God.
Oh, no.
So the idea was kind of like,
it
wasn't like, what do you think about God? Like, do you accept him as your savior, Jesus, and all this kind of stuff? It was more like, we got to do it for Papa.
Yeah.
He's on his way out.
That's okay. Really
Let's
interesting.
Let's go do it. Yeah. Do you want to? But it's a kind of question. Like, you don't have a choice.
Yeah. And also, I don't really have a reason not to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, okay, you don't really get it. And so you kind of just go through those motions. And that's kind of what it was. Again, wasn't reading on my own, obviously. Wasn't asking questions. Wasn't going to the children's ministry because, I don't know, I didn't do a lot with those kind of people, and they always seemed really weird to me. Like, I didn't go to, like, I feel like I have so many friends out here. It's like, we went to, like, vacation Bible school. We went to the camps, and we went to the sleepovers and this, and I didn't do any of that. All the stuff that you guys talk about in here, like, mm-hmm. these popular artists that, like, everyone knows in, like, Bible circles, I don't know any of them. And maybe that was, like, a purpose of, like, I just don't want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
I didn't, like, tap into a lot of that stuff. So anyways, I kind of grew up that way, and it's just, again, but if you would have asked me, I wouldn't have hesitated and said, like, mm-hmm. oh, yeah, I'm Christian.
Right.
Because I grew up in it, and it's just, I didn't do anything to take myself out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just is what it is. I'm here now. And I was forced to go, you know, not gun to my head, but it's like, okay, the family's going, okay, let's go. And I would help my parents teach Sunday school with my brother, 'cause that was the only way to kind of get us there to stay there. And
you'd help teach Sunday school?
Yeah. Well, would help.
You'd be like, here's how you play hangman.
Well, my mom would be
this cool closet we can wander to.
Yeah, all the dress up. Well, my mom would be the one teaching the stuff. Mm-hmm. And so very much it was like, well, we'll be here and we'll help kind of put the papers out.
Yeah,
and sure we'll stand in the corner. I'll be like the muscle. TA. I'll be the muscle. It's like, watch it twerk.
The bouncer.
Exactly. You didn't pray hard enough, kid.
Eyes closed.
Yeah, we did for third graders. And I guess it was, again, it was another example of being on the periphery, kind of outside looking in, not really doing it myself, but watching other people be a part of it. And it got to the age, obviously, once I could start driving myself, I didn't choose to like go anymore. Mm-hmm. And then in college, wasn't going at all. I think it was kind of like that two per year Christian where it's Easter, Christmas.
Oh yeah, the Creaster Christian.
Yeah, because that's where family's going. That's where we're all going. So
it sounds like you weren't getting a ton of pressure from your parents at that point to like stay engaged.
You know what? I wasn't, and to their credit, I think they were so forced. I think they were aware. I mean, my mom had a lot of trauma that I think she didn't get to, which is really sad that she didn't get to process it. And I only got to hear a glimpse of it at the end, mm-hmm. was that her growing up, it was like your dad, my grandpa, the pastor, that's what means more than anything.
Yeah.
So everyone is second place,
everything.
Third place, fourth place to the other fellow pastors, the other the people in the congregation, if they have questions. So your dad loves you, but you come in like fourth or fifth.
Yeah, and also you need to hold it together.
You can't be a problem. You can't go be a part of Girl Scouts. Mm-hmm. You can't do anything because we have the one car. And he needs to go to the church. So you can't do anything. We need to be at his beck and call if he kind of needs anything. By the way, we're going to Brazil for about 5-6 years during like her formidable years when you should be like making friends or rebelling. And she didn't get any of that. And my dad was probably the same way. And so to their credit, I think when I was growing up, they didn't want to have to force me. They were so afraid of forcing so much that then we would bail because they built us up to be more independent. And so they also kind of knew part of that is that if they push too hard, we would feel more comfortable to be like, peace, right. I'm not dealing with this.
Right.
Where they didn't have that. And so, yeah, we didn't have the gun to our head. There was some kind of, sometimes more from my dad, like, this is what you got to do. This is what we do. Or don't make mom sad. Mom, you better not make mom angry. Like, you got to go. Those kind of conversations.
Yeah.
And so we did that a couple times. And then college, you know, you're so on your own. And once we went to college, it was like, there was none of that really. It was like, you're your own adult now at this point. Right. We're not going to tell you what to do. I'll kind of passively suggest that you should go. And so I think there was always kind of an interest there, just of the nugget of growing up in it. Enough that was like, that's interesting. What is that? I still don't really know besides what you isms that you hear or kind of this or that. And so I remember checking out a church once or twice while in college.
Sorry, Dexter.
My story's boring.
No,
I'm sorry.
Is it snoring?
Oh,
what is that?
He's like, tough
crowd. Tough crowd.
Damn.
Rude. If you want to be a producer, you need to pay attention.
Damn.
So I remember a pivotal moment, and it's so weird, and I very rarely get to share it, is wasn't Christian really, besides like name, but I was sleeping with my girlfriend at the time, and I thought I'd got her pregnant, and I was so terrified that I started praying. And that was the only, it was because like for me, when my relationship with God at the time was like vending machine, Jesus,
right.
I need a thing,
yeah.
Crisis. Uh-huh. I need you now. Yeah. Hey, I haven't seen you in 20 years, but I need
get
you.
To work.
I
don't
show
need,
up.
I don't need plan B. I need plan JC.
Oh.
Oh.
Plan G.
Oh, good plan
and G.
And it was one of those things where you're like, the bargaining kind of thing where it's like, yeah. Man, if she, please don't let this happen. I swear I'll start coming to church.
Kind of like the opposite of Abraham and Sarah in the Bible.
Stop this pregnancy.
Don't give me a baby.
The miracle will be stopping this pregnancy. obviously that didn't happen. And so I was like, okay, well, shit, I guess I got to keep up my side of the bargain. Damn it, you got me, guys.
It's funny now, but like, I know at the time you were like, I made a promise.
Yeah,
you know,
it was. And,
you very sweet.
And I don't know if it's just my proclivity or if it's growing up in the church, but there is like a built-in kind of guilt that I have where it's like, I will just eat myself alive if I don't do the thing that I said I would do. And so I started going to church once every other month.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't find a place that I liked. Hey, I'm going.
For the no baby lifestyle, you could do once every
other month. The terms were loose.
Hey, I was searching on the internet. My heart was kind of there. I was Googling.
You're lucky to get what you get, God.
Oh my God.
That's
and so
funny.
it was enough that I was like, okay, I'm at least engaging-ish with it. I'm researching. I'm looking. What
He's
is
doing
this?
His own research.
I'm showing up late, sitting in the back. I'm showing up late, sitting in the back
Make
pew,
no friends.
Not talking to a soul, peacing out when the prayer starts, and like I was there.
Technically, you went to church.
I mean, I just reverted back to when I was a kid. Just like check mark
on this.
I
on
was
the sideline.
In the room.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did I listen? No.
Yeah.
I was probably trying to, but I didn't know what was talked about.
Yeah.
It's like God's your parole officer.
Yeah. Gotta get stamped. Yeah. I was here. Yeah. It was good.
Well, and it sounds like, too, you still kind of had a feeling of like the people that are like in on this are either like my grandpa and that family, and that was rough, or they're weird, like you said. They're like, I don't know if I'd be friends with them anyway.
I tried to hold myself to this, like, I'm the cool Christian, though.
Mm-hmm.
Like, which is basically was kind of like, do whatever, I guess. It was kind of like, oh, those people over there, those are like, I would always use the word like Bible thumpers.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the Bible thumpers who are like, they're kind of weird.
Yeah.
It's like talking in tongues. That's weird. weird. And I'm not that much, but yay, I like God. I love God. Cool. And that was kind of the end of it. You know, like, we're bros. That was my relationship, I think, for the longest time. And so people would ask me, my friends who were atheists or anything else, I was like, oh, yeah, I love God. But, like, I wouldn't be able to back it up with any kind of knowledge. It was like, oh, yeah, I am because I am, because mm-hmm. I was raised that way. Mm-hmm. Because my mom and dad know him. And so, right, and yeah. I know them. So I'm connected to them.
Yeah.
And I think that was how it was for, like, my senior year in college. And then I moved out to LA, and I still had enough of a want of, I want to not completely, I never wanted to completely abandon it. Mm-hmm. Where my brother, like, did and was fine with it and didn't look back. For me, it was like, I like something that's here, but I still don't, it's a mystery to me. But it was enough to, and when I moved to LA out of college, to want to continue pursuing it. And honestly, I probably would have continued to do the Googling, I showed up once, and whatever, I'll go over once in a while. But I happened to just room with a friend who was going to the same church that Kevin was going to also. And he was just adamant about, like, bringing me, almost like annoyingly so, just because it was like, I don't feel like it, whatever, I still, whatever. And I just kept getting pulled along. And the church was just so different than, it's funny looking at it now, I would consider it a pretty conservative church.
Right. But at the time, it seemed pretty rock and roll.
But compared to...
You got guys like Kevin Porter there?
But
Mr. Vest?
People have a guitar? This is cool.
Ukuleles are in again?
But seriously, when all you've known... Because even the churches that I would look up, when I would look up Baptist, just because that was all I know.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm doing Southern Baptist.
At least I know what I'm getting when I show up here.
Brand loyal.
Right, yeah.
Where it's sitting in a pew with an organ and it's like no one talks. Seriously, it's funny to say that the new church in LA I was going to felt way more liberal, was just compared to what I knew, where it was little kids would get up there and like sing, and then it was met with like nothing. Like no one would clap.
For the children?
It was because like no one made sounds. Like you weren't allowed to make sounds in the church.
That's bizarre.
And so it was just like,
I kind of like that now. I might enjoy
everyone shut up. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, in reality, you know, we're turning and we're supposed to do discussion with each other and like prayer and stuff.
And the pastor at the time was like, oh, I used to be in a rock band. A guy who was like closer to my age, where I was so used to like 80-year-olds wearing a suit, where it's like I cannot connect to you at all. Whereas he was like was in bands and drugs, rock and roll.
It was
more charismatic, and it felt like
hot. He was a hot 31-year-old man, very young, very
that
attractive.
Wasn't important to me at the time, but I can see it for you. Yeah. It mattered
very,
a lot.
Very charismatic though. Very charismatic.
A lot of charisma.
And
that's what I mean by hot. Yeah, holistic. There was things about him that
he was funny. He was great at speaking.
Absolutely, very talented. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so it was really easy to get sucked into that. And again, like not in a bad way. It was like, wow, this feels like what I've been looking for, where it's actually like people my own age here. We're into the same stuff.
Now that we're talking about it, I'm like, we went to big youth group.
Absolutely.
The pastor's young and he's cool. And he's like age and he knows my movies that I watch and stuff.
Well,
you know?
And not to get too into it, but the genesis, if you will, of that church network was a college ministry in Santa Barbara. So the name Reality was literally the name that they had this is for college students. And then the overflow of different churches and different cities was from that original thing.
I guess it was just like a generational shift too. Mm-hmm. Like millennials were coming along. We needed a church for us.
It's not the vibe there now, I don't think.
Anyway.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's, again, it felt so like different to me and it was really exciting. And so I went from passive to then more active. Then I was going to community groups. Then I was more actually reading my Bible and pressing in, asking questions actually, I probably wasn't asking that many questions then. It was more just like, I'm for the first time reading this book and just taking it at face value, because I just didn't know anything from the Bible besides what you hear as a kid about Noah, or about Noah and the whale, or not Noah and the whale. Oh my God, Jonah and the whale and Noah and the ark.
There's probably a whale around that ark somewhere.
I've already lost all my knowledge.
You're just naming Darren Aronofsky.
Exactly.
Noah and the whale.
Exactly. Exactly. And
yeah, I get it.
And I think that was kind of how it was for about 10 years, just trying to grow and learn and have a relationship And I think the only other kind of major shift has been in the past 3 or 4 years, where it gets to the point where you hear so many questions and outside noise that it becomes impossible to ignore or push away questions or things that just don't feel right about the culture or about American church and the way my own church that I'm going to, and things that you buck up against, and these things that you've just always kind of taken of like, oh, why can't like women preach in this church? Mm-hmm. Okay. It's just the way it's always been. And then it gets to the point where like the answers like that aren't good enough anymore. And so you start asking things. And so I feel like I've been on more of a deconstruction kind of path the past 3 or 4 years, and which is like honestly really scary, and I don't like.
What's scary about it?
It's scary questioning everything you've believed your whole life, and doubt floods in, and then it's hard. It's hard when you circle maybe a hole or there's a gap there, for that not to ripple to and bleed into mm-hmm. other things, and then it gets scary, and then you're just trying to hold on to what you have. What do I know? And then you're like, is anything real?
Yes.
And so I think I've gone from that to the extreme of like, maybe nothing's real, to now trying to find the middle ground of breaking down the, I don't know, questioning the things that are like, is this actually a sin, or is this just systemic like racism or sexism or homophobia that has bled into it and they've become the same thing?
Yeah.
And now it's like, how do I traverse that? I think I'm currently in a place of how do you traverse this thing? Because I'll tell you, like, there's what I want to be true. And, but then it's like, well, it's not, you're always told it's not about me and I want to do what I'm supposed to do. But then you try and research and I can find a million articles that say why it's right or not right. And
right.
It's hard to, so it's easy to gravitate toward, well, this is just more comfortable. Either it's more comfortable because I've always been this way and let's just not ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's more comfortable to be like, well, this feels icky. Mm-hmm. And this doesn't feel cool or about like how Jesus was. And so I find myself kind of there currently of still, haven't really gone to church that much lately because I have 2 kids and there was a pandemic. So I'm still trying to be like, how do I do that? And how do I have that? But still in relationship with friends and are pursuing that in a way, but it just feels different.
Yeah.
It feels like you can't go home again kind of thing where you can't put Pandora back in the box. And so it doesn't feel as comfortable as it used to, which is sad, kind of. But it's also, I'm glad that I'm not being a part or trying to fight against being a part of a system that also like oppresses and hurts people.
Yeah.
I think there's a true psychological shift that feels almost as basic as like object permanence for little kids, which is like, if you stop going to a building every week, then it's like, oh, wait, what's the authority over me? Like, it does shift in your head mm-hmm. in a different way, just like not mm-hmm. being in the tangible space. And the other thing I would say, too, in specific to what you're talking about, is I think across the spectrum for people of faith or not, like believing in anything, is this sort of existential battle against nihilism, which is like, even for like the most liberal, or I should say the most progressive socialist, you know, it's easy to get into like, well, my vote doesn't count. Nothing means anything. I can't affect change. And I think sometimes when you're in a spot like you're in where you are wanting to be very discriminating and careful and thoughtful about the way that you construct a point of view, and especially as someone who has a family, so it's like, what do I tell the kids again? Yeah. That it's easy to sort of buy in. And I think there's people that profit off of this idea. It's like a false dichotomy of like, it's either I have to believe that everything is stupid and nothing means anything and it's all just a black void, or I have to believe that what the Apostle Paul said is absolutely right, word for word, you know, like that. And it's not, I personally don't view it like that, that it's like between one or the other. And I think there's a lot of people in similar spaces like that, that kind of take advantage of that looming existential dread that I would imagine every human in some fashion feels at different points in their life. And it doesn't have to be like that. But then also, there's such comfort in the specificity and definition of a lot of stuff, rather than like, you know, it's not comforting is like, I don't know, figure it out, make it up, and choose your own adventure. That's less easy than like, okay, here's the dimensions of the boat that you're getting in, and here's how you're going to float on it, and here's the paddles, and here's what the oars do, you know, like that. It's less comforting in that, but it doesn't make it less true. So I empathize with the idea, though, that it feels like the house of cards thing of like, if I take this card out, the whole thing falls apart. But I think it doesn't have to be like that. It just requires sometimes an annoying amount of effort okay, let me really pay attention and mind to this stuff, if that makes sense.
For sure. And that's for sure where I'm at. I'm trying to, I think where I was at one end of the spectrum and then it's easy to drift to the other end of the spectrum, I think I'm definitely in a more of kind of like saving babies from bathwater kind of situation where it's save the root of it and hold true to this. But then all this other stuff that you were told was just as equally important, like it's not, or it's like hurtful or these other things. And at first it feels wrong or hard to know what to like break away because you're told that like not to do that. Feels like for the longest time.
That's like the worst thing you could do is to decide what is ethical or not in this life we lead. But, you know, you're being very brave and like you're doing the right thing. And what you're doing is like you are taking the ethics that you learned in your faith growing up and you're making it consistent across your life.
Yeah.
And even to the point of stepping outside the people that gave you those ethics in the first place, you know, and you're also in the process that is very scary, but extremely wonderful to be like, I actually can trust myself to some degree, to decide if something is right or not. And my life and my lived experience has proved that to me, and that matters. It doesn't matter. You used to hear it like it didn't matter like what you went through or what someone who was harmed by homophobia in the church went through.
Yeah.
It didn't matter if it didn't align with this like interpretation. But you're learning it does matter, and it does inform what you do. And like it's what we all have to do and decide, like, what do we actually care about? What are my ethics? What are my values? And then it is totally fine to then recombobulate and Lego build your faith after you do that, you know, and take the things that matter to you. And it sounds like you're doing that. And it's really, it's brave. And you could, like you said, you could just be in inertia and let it pass over you and like kind of check in or check out or not try to align your values with what your church is saying.
Yeah.
But you're doing that work. That's really hard. So way to go.
I appreciate that. And it is, and you're right, it is hard. And it's hard again because you're told it sounds like an abusive relationship. And it, I guess in some ways it is, unfortunately. And again, like not crapping on, there's so much good about it, but there is a lot of bad too. And it's really hard, even hearing you say, we should be able to like trust ourselves to a certain extent, but that's like not kind of what you're told in the church. You're told in the church of like, God loves you, but you were broken and fallen and like a black heart kind of in a way.
Who
of
does
like,
it serve
how
to teach
can
us
you
that we can't trust ourselves?
It makes you only, it makes you completely doubt yourself. But I'm just trying to hold it all and balance it. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard. And I was doing that with two new kids as like my mom died. And a lot, it was like, it's been a rough season of just trying to, because I wanted nothing more than just like the hope of heaven when my mom died. Mm-hmm. But then when I was in the midst of deconstruction, and so you're like, this is not hitting me at the right time.
I hate that feeling.
It was really like a shitty time. And I feel like I'm coming out of it, but in existential kind of crises and all that, and a lot of just like heavy stuff at the same time. And I couldn't run back to just like the blanket of like, it'll be okay.
It didn't feel good anymore either.
It didn't feel good anymore. Kind of like I said, like the box,
so
the Pandora
hard.
Box.
Which I think, to underline Caroline's point, makes it all the more courageous to not accept pat theology or answers when there's a part of you that's like, oh, this is the thing that would be absolutely most comfortable.
Totally.
In the midst of like such loss with family, it underlines even more like, the importance of you asking those questions. And either way, I don't know. It's just one of those things when I think about it, especially because like the two things that like we've talked about a lot on this show with guests is like, well, what do people decide about what they believe? Two of the most common testing points for that, it's like everyone's an atheist until, you know, there's turbulence on the plane. But two of the most common points to that are when someone you love passes away and when you have kids to raise as a parent. Stewarding both of those at the same time. I think it is impressive just to survive in that way, as well as do all the work that you're doing.
Yeah,
emotionally and psychologically.
I appreciate that. I didn't know I'd come here and just like get patted on the back.
You should get patted on the back.
Thank you.
Yes.
I am a wonderful person.
you're doing the right thing. Yeah.
Do whatever you want, man.
And also like anything goes.
If God put it on your heart, go for it.
But I mean, that is part of it too, of like trusting yourself and also being like, I'm not always right either. Yeah. And that's okay too. I'll figure it out, and that'll be okay.
I think you're totally right. And Kevin, you're right when you were saying like, it requires a lot more thought and patience and precision because it was, and I know a lot of people, and I was this way also, where it was like, it was all or nothing. It was like, I want all of it or I want none of it. Mm-hmm. And my brother very much has still been in that kind of outside looking in. And for him, all he sees of the church is, God hates gay people and they're all going to burn in hell forever. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to them at my mother's deathbed. So this was a wild time. My brother was trying to talk about his faith. Wow. And he was just like, I just can't get on board with this. Like what? I don't want to be part of that. And hearing that was like, man, I get it. That sounds loving and it sounds very hateful. But whereas he was like, I can't deal with it. Peace out to all of it. I feel like I am trying to be more patient of like, how do I tweeze and work out or chisel away and make this stone this sculpture that is more emblematic of what I think Jesus and the church should be. Yeah. And I'm having to chip that stuff away and chip it away on myself, which again,
well, you can do it. And you're not the first person to do this,
sure,
you know, that's the comfort too.
Yeah.
You'll have so many people throughout history and now in churches around this town doing the exact same thing you're doing and finding a faith that is still helpful and beautiful and good for you and your family and not also bringing this baggage of like, we have to harm others to exist, God, you know?
I know.
Yeah, it's possible. Like it's there, but like give yourself time too, you know?
Yeah. And within that like context of relationship with other people, that's the thing that kind of gives you the permission to do that. Because when you are surrounded by what feels like the monoculture of like, this is it. And you can stray from it, but then this is what it is. The more you get into those like smaller niches of community, just because it's smaller, obviously doesn't make it less true or less true from you. And the one thing I would say, just speaking from personal experience with you, is that wherever you end up with it, I know you would never be someone who would put the people you love in your life and your family and your wife and your kids second to God in the way that you describe that sometimes your mother experienced.
You're like, right.
I've known you for a decade and a half. I have full confidence that would never happen. So I would just express the comfort of like, I'm not worried about that part of it.
And
I kind of trust your discernment and instincts.
Well, and I feel like if you're doing it the quote unquote right way, I mean, who knows what the right way is, but it's like, you shouldn't have to choose like, well, either I love God or I love my kids.
Right.
And it has like, no, it shouldn't have to be that way.
What God would ask that of you.
It should be like the same way that like, I love my wife and out of that, you
that
love your kid.
You.
Yeah, guides you. It shouldn't be, I gotta pick one.
Yeah.
Sorry, kids, you're coming up. Bye. You're
right.
Like,
what?
That
ridiculous.
Really sucks.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that. And yeah, the deconstruction thing is very just interesting because I have a lot of friends and people who are going through it and they've been a great resource and backup. But then I know some of them, I get afraid of deconstructing so much where now then you're just kind of left in a rubble and you don't know what to rebuild or if you want to rebuild. And so I feel like that's been scary too, where it's like, no, I want this thing and I'm trying to, I don't want to break it all down where then I don't know left from right. And now I'm just in the deep end of the pool and I can't see the edge. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm not sure you guys talk about this all the time on the show, but I don't know. Are you guys in a similar place or how are you guys in, I guess in your kind of, or is that, or am I not supposed to ask that?
No. We
sorry.
Asked the question.
Oh, shit. Damn.
Moving along. No.
Damn, Adam, don't get personal.
I find a lot of permission from the, because some of this does honestly function in like a socially Darwinian sort of way where it's just like, there's groupthink and you become a part of the communities where your values align and your interests align. So I feel like even in community with like my new church and then honestly being in community with people, being in community, Jesus, I sound like I'm in a community group right now. So doing life.
Falling back to patterns with me, community.
Kevin. I promise
you. Got us
you.
In our Reality LA bag now.
Exactly. That's the thing that I feel kind of immovable confidence in is like if you take whatever the poetic idea or the poetry image of the body of Christ being the church and then the church being the people, I have an easier time putting my faith in like imperfect people that I know can hurt me and I can hurt them or disappoint and whatever, but my particular sort of like demonstration or performance of faith, I think functions best in that context now, rather than like, okay, I need to like square, there's contradictions between the Gospel of John and the Gospel of Luke. So what does that mean for, you know, whether women can be allowed to talk, you know, like
right.
I try to not avail myself with that so much and just like trust the people that are in front of me. And you know, whether that's like the folly of man or blah blah blah, I'm really trying to shed that idea. And I still, this is sort of the bringing a gun to a knife fight with it, but like with whatever the belief system is, I would rather be wrong technically if it's like actually it was this and you should have followed scripture. I'd rather be wrong about that and for to have like a decent personal legacy with the people I love and know.
You were wrong because you were leading out of love as opposed to, well, I was wrong because I was hating people.
Right.
Yeah.
Rather than like be right and like break my back to be faithful to something that then people are the collateral damage of,
right.
If that makes sense.
Totally.
So that's how it is for me right now.
You get that?
Yeah. That's what like love your neighbor is about.
Yeah.
Literally like let people guide in some level the way you feel people should be treated and their ethics to be fine.
Yeah. Especially after the past couple of years, when you just see so many people who claim to be Christian and you just do not want to be like them.
Yeah,
you're just
yeah.
like, wait, we're calling ourselves the same thing.
Right.
Something is not cool about this. Mm. So something needs to change. And so those are the kind of eye-opening stuff that should have happened probably earlier, but
it's okay.
At least it's happening now.
Yeah, it's fine. And I think like I don't see you getting to the point where you're in rubble and don't know where to go left or right. I don't think that's, I don't know, maybe that has happened or could, but I don't think that would be where you stay.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like that's who you are. And also, I don't know. I think the more you exist outside the atmosphere, as you have been doing, of Christianity, the world is so much bigger than Christianity. There are so many things out there, and there are so many beautiful ways to cling to spirituality and care and love for each other. I think I'm just like, I'm in the place now where I'm still like discovering the expanse of what is available to us to live well and happily and to enjoy our time here on Earth. And so I'm just like leaning into that and letting that kind of come to me as it does. And then otherwise, like, I still have to go to work and like get my coffee and like whatever and be a human. And it's fine to have both of those things at the same time. And I think the longer I have lived outside of the church, the less I feel lost and the more I feel like, oh, there's actually a bajillion safety nets underneath me. And I can also trust myself, like we talked about too. Yeah. You know, like I will find a way and it will be okay. And my world hasn't fallen apart this far.
For sure.
So like it'll be fine. And again, and I keep myself open to like, I may totally radically change my mind about this. If a tragedy came to me, or if something really opened my eyes, something else, like I may become a hardcore Buddhist. Like I have no idea, you know? Yeah. But for now, like I'm fine.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
I think you're right about like the big world out there. And I think that's what was delayed me, is that when you grow up in Texas, it's a big place, and it feels like
the world. The whole world. Yeah.
And when you're certainly when you're a child.
Yeah, of course.
And so
it does.
When you see just corny whatever on billboards, and you see churches on every corner, it's just like you're inundated with it. So it feels like that is the world.
Yeah. And America is small.
Yeah.
you know, like there's just so much.
That's why, man, it was such you hear it from so many people, but it really is like everyone should like leave where they live and go live somewhere else. And even coming from, I mean, still being in the same country, but it feels like different worlds being in Texas and California, mm-hmm. certainly LA, and just opening up and just seeing like, oh yeah, the world is a lot bigger than Mesquite, Texas, and mm-hmm. and whatever.
Whether or not I'm going to that church or not.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. You'll be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Man, well, I'm just so proud of you. I hope that doesn't sound condescending, but I've just known you for so long.
No, it doesn't.
I have such pride in you. I've always felt that way.
No, I appreciate that. I mean, we've been a part of each other's lives for a long time, and we've experienced a lot together and similar stages and gone through stuff. And I think you were going through what I'm going through just like 8 years prior, or even earlier.
In some ways, but then it was also different. Like the specs of it were different too, in terms of like life circumstance family stuff. So yeah, it's not one for one, but yeah, it's not like you're catching up or something.
For
but
sure.
Just the idea of like, yes, some of the similar questions exist. Yeah. But mm-hmm. I'm not worried about you at all.
Thanks, guys, for loving on me.
Yay.
Hey, we're here to love on you.
We did a community group, you guys.
Yeah. Okay. All right, we're going to take a break to pray.
And love on Adam.
And we'll be right back with more good Christian fun.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, wow.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Welcome back to Good Christian Fun. It's time to dive into the topic. Come on, let's go. I guess we're diving into the end zone, right?
Nice.
Of some sort of...
I well can't done. Wait to watch you work through this
I know.
Story.
Did you have to Google that term?
Okay. And zone, end zone.
Did you know... How long did it take for you to realize what the pocket was?
I still don't know.
I
think it's taken until the end of this podcast.
I was hoping no one
podcast.
Would ask.
Okay, so
I think I
I'm
know.
Embarrassed because I already knew Kurt Warner's story. I'm a big football fan.
Okay.
And why is it embarrassing?
Because
I'm
I know
so
it's not
cool
in this
no,
city
it is cool.
to know sports.
I think it's fun.
insane.
I'm so glad you did. I was hoping one of us would know what the fuck was going on in this movie.
You know, if you would have told me that, like, the combination of, like, film, God, football, then I've been
Chuck.
Like, that's me. Chuck, sign me up. And then you're like, well, then you get this. But yes, I will be here to answer all, any and all football questions, which I'm sure no one cares about.
Thank you. We're in the pocket of
here's what I would ask. Do you think that the football action, because you're a big Friday Night Lights fan like
I am, sure.
Do you feel like the football action was credibly directed? Like the choreography of it, watching it in the movie?
Okay, so it's a great question. Now, I was going to even ask you guys, like, I think football is a hard sport to film.
To make cinematic.
I was thinking that. Yeah. I was like, this must be so hard to do this.
I did a video on my channel, Entertaining the Elk, about how I think actually baseball is the best because it's so slow.
And it's all drama. It's all drama.
There's the slow pace. You can see certain people in the dugout. There's a lot of like isms and a lot of traditions about baseball. But with football, it's like short bursts of like 22 people on the field. And you're like,
a millimeter
what?
Between them.
Yeah.
Like, how are you supposed to get the camera in there?
It's hard to get all of it. And, yeah. But even they were doing arena football a little bit in there, which has its own rules that I watched for like a couple, like half a game, and I was bored by it. But so there's a lot. I think it was filmed. I mean, fine, I guess. I mean, all the places looked like it was just green screen or really dark, and that is what it is, a small budget. But I think it was fine.
Yeah.
I think that my biggest thought about this movie is going to be, in summation, it's the biggest sin is that it is being boring. And it wasn't a good film. It wasn't like the worst film that would make it fun to, like, you know, have a drinking game or like to laugh at with your friends. Mm-hmm. It was just like fine.
I'm just like
boring.
It was aggressively fine.
Yeah. I think living your life must have been a wild roller coaster. Watching it was not. It was just like, well, and also
it was Mr. Toad's wild ride.
It's just like, I mean, this sucks. Like, I'm sorry this happened to you. This is terrible. I don't know what the like lesson we're supposed to learn here, or like what is it? What's like? I mean, a tornado ripped her family out of the house.
Well,
like, that's not good.
Hang on.
Baby boy
Anna
was
Paquin's
like dropped
on her head in the tub.
I mean, there was like some horrifying shit that happened to these people. Like, I'm with.
He almost let them freeze to death in their car.
They almost froze to death. It's like stuff that like happens to average people throughout all of our lives.
Losers,
you know? Losers. But that doesn't make a movie.
No, totally
you know?
Right.
And it was also knowing that, like, I know he's Kurt Warner. I know he will be a football star by the end of this. So we're just like slogging through the worst things that happen to you in your life.
So
sorry, we're jumping around. But yes, you're totally right.
Let's back it up a little bit. This is American Underdog. It's a brisk hour, 50 minutes. You can watch it on Hulu if you deign to do so. It's an Irwin Brothers movie. The Irwin Brothers are not, we've said it before, but just to reemphasize, it's not like Kirk Cameron Core, Bargain Bin, Jim Baker.
Not the Cristiano Brothers.
No. It's like incredibly competently made movies. Yeah. They shoot it in Atlanta, in Oklahoma. They always make their money back. Although they've not made as much money since, I can only imagine, The Juggernaut. I can only imagine.
Even though this felt
like a spiritual reunion with Dennis Quaid back in the mix and whatnot. But this follows the...
I just wrote it on the mic. Sorry. Oh, God.
No,
oh, God. It's all coming
like
out.
Elvis.
Emma, take it and double it. It follows his sort of ascent to quarterback of the Rams status from years 1992 to 1999. Roughly.
Yeah.
And his romance with his wife, Brenda Warner, whose hair does look like that.
Oh, it really does.
And I had so many notes.
And this is the thing I want your take, Adam, on it too, because I'm so unfamiliar with the general arc of what a professional athlete has to go through to get to, you know, the highest echelon of like literally winning the Super Bowl, literally being a star quarterback. I would imagine there's usually some adversity, just generally. Like, yeah, it's kind of hard. Like, it's a very privileged position to make a shit ton of money playing a game. You know, doesn't mean, like, that they're not deserving or not talented or whatever. I was very confused watching the movie. What was particularly interesting about his journey there, because I'm unfamiliar with what the average journey is, I couldn't identify what was unique about his.
It's other, like he wasn't drafted, and so that right. was like the big
guys,
woo.
Let me take you under my wing, okay. and I'll tell you what they were talking about. Now, and this is my perspective of having never played, never good at sports.
Yeah.
I like watching them, but I haven't gone through, obviously,
that's not
any
a
of this myself.
At all for okay. liking football.
I felt it was because I'm going to talk a big game when it's like, I just watch. So the idea is that like when you are recruited, high school into college, the idea is that like the big high schools have the big talent that go to the big colleges. Like you go to Alabama or Georgia
it's
or
like
Texas.
It's like a pipeline for
it
all
is.
Of these guys.
And so when you're at these like, that single A schools, whatever, the big, sure. the big schools, mm-hmm. they're the ones who have the most eyes on them. They have the most money, the biggest games. They play on prime time. The most more scouts can see them. And so then there's more chance to have more film out there that then the idea is like, okay, you're playing against the best of the best. We've seen it a little bit on tape. We'll draft you, whatever. This idea with this is that it's harder when you go to a smaller school, double A school or whatever, that's like in the middle of nowhere. You have no film. You're playing against nobody.
Your coaches aren't connected to anybody they would know.
You're playing against soon-to-be teachers and like right. Nurses or whatever. You know, valid members of your community, but these aren't people who are like and are like just machines who are going to kill you on the football field. Mm-hmm. And so the idea was like, no one's ever made it out of a double A school. It's really hard. And so why bother? And he was a backup, so he didn't have a lot of film to get out there. So I think that was like the big thing they were trying to set up was that you're a backup at a small school. No one knows who you are.
Right.
And then I think he was a fifth year player. So he was also kind of older.
Yeah.
Okay. A lot of people want like the bang for their buck. So they want you like a year or two out of college. So that way you're young still and not, I mean, God.
It was very clear that working or playing in arena football was like being a rodeo
not cool.
clown.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like looked down
I got
on.
That.
It's like, this isn't like legit.
Yeah, it's like WWE football, I guess.
So, exactly. So it is a movie that tracks that at the same time it's tracking his romance with Brenda Warner, as played by Anna Paquin. And obviously, Kurt Warner is an EP on this movie. It's all sanctioned.
Very clear. Everything was so, you could tell, was so valuable to him. Every single moment of
totally,
his life
totally.
Needed to be told.
And yes. Brenda and Kurt, they're on the promotional trail for this movie, gassing it up, talking about why it's great. And honestly, articulating it better than the directors did sometimes. I was watching some interviews where one of the Irwins was just saying, like, yeah, it's a movie about following your dreams. And if you have a dream, you should follow it and you can do anything and anything is possible. And after this year and a half we've had, we need that right now, the value of it after
watch
a
people
pandemic.
Something achieve something.
And what's most interesting to me about this movie, because this is not offensive, it doesn't really have a specific point of view politically like some of this stuff does, but there's this assumption of it's in the title, but like maybe American exceptionalism and something that Kurt says in the movie is played by Chuck himself, Zachary Levi, famous Christian.
Old Zachary
is he really?
Levi, I gotta
famous
say.
Famous Christian.
I did not know that.
Oh yeah, he talks about it all the time.
I did not know why he was in this movie because it was coming off of like Shazam, which was like his biggest thing by
yeah.
far.
That's
so
the
I was
thing.
Like, why were you
it's
in this?
It's usually a lower tier where it's like, well, you want to stay busy, you can make one of these movies. He did this movie. He has another faith-based film coming out.
Oh, wow, I didn't
which
know
he's starring
about.
With Megan Fahey from White Lotus for some reason. Some other people. Okay. I think they shot it a while ago. But like, clearly, it's because he has. Because it is something where it's like, yeah, you're Shazam. You're good. You're on Marvelous Mrs. Right. Maisel. You're good. Mm-hmm. Which he's pretty good on that.
He's doing one for him, two for God.
It is so funny for him to play a Christian quarterback rock star in this movie and to have him play a Jewish man on Mrs. Maisel at the same time.
Well, also for him to be 40 playing a 20-year-old
that was
for
rough,
half
you
the
guys.
Movie. For
John,
half
like,
the
John
movie.
C. Riley hey, and Dewey Cox
you guys.
Story.
Yes. Half the movie. I was like, we're here for like 5 minutes. No, we're here for like an hour.
Yeah.
But something he articulates a couple of times is, why would God give me a dream that he wouldn't want me to come to fruition? Why would this, and his love of the game as articulated to his future wife and his, romantic interest at the time is like something my dad and I really cared about before he left, and I feel comfortable with the football. And that's all we're given. That's like the only specs to like.
It's like, I like football.
Yeah.
But that makes me a special man in America.
Well,
you know?
And that's what I'm wondering. I'm interested in the intersection of like, and not to make it like totally Jesus and John Wayne, but just the idea of like, if I want to do something, it has to happen. It has to be accomplished.
I deserve it.
And right. Like my path will be cleared to make that happen. It's not good. I'm going to have to work on it.
Yeah.
I'll have to do everything, but so will everyone else because like it must happen because I can do it. Therefore I will do it. You know?
Yeah. It intersects with like prosperity theology a little bit, which is like God wouldn't give you a dream if he didn't want you to see it to fruition.
So and it happened means, for him.
Right.
Who cares about the thousands of other boys, you know, who dreamed of being quarterback in the NFL?
It's such
you know?
An easy trap or kind of dangerous kind of ideology about like, if you have a dream that God put on your heart,
right.
You will get
and
that
God
thing.
Will make that, and just give it some time, yeah. You know, like that will happen.
I feel like it's such,
abandon your family.
Yeah, get your wife
them,
on board.
Let them die. Yeah, it's like, ugh.
One thing I will say is it was very cool how central his wife, Brenda, was to the story. She was not like a sideline character. Character who was just like cheering him on, you know, like go do football. I'll do whatever it
You're
takes.
Never gonna make it.
Yeah, never gonna make it. She was like their romance really mattered to his story, which I thought was really special. Was it interesting? No, but I'm glad they like put an emphasis on like she is not second fiddle to him. Like she is very much a part of the story and a driving force in his life.
And it's almost a trope culturally to when people think about. Christianity in popular culture in the 20th or 21st century is you think of athletes in speeches and when they win the Super Bowl being like, I want to thank God. I want to thank Jesus Christ. And this is almost just like zooming in on to that. Like, why did they thank God? Let's find out.
Right.
Like, this is just like the backstory to a familiar thing where it's like, is Kurt Warner, does he have like a special mind or a beautiful gift that's unparalleled and genius in a way that's singular compared to the rest of his field? I literally can't tell. Probably not. But that's the thing I found most interesting is like, it's a pretty paint by numbers, follow your dream and your dream is good with a little bit of God juice under it. And not even Jesus Christ, just when they play, you know, and when they do the little montage that these kinds of movies are prone to do, Christian or not, at the end where it's like, and now here's footage of the real guy. It's real. They play his speech and he's at the Super Bowl and they say, you were stocking shelves 5 years ago and now you won the Super Bowl. And he says, yeah, I want to thank my family. I want to thank God. He thanks Jesus Christ in the real speech. They don't put it in the movie.
Oh, interesting. They
edit, they de-Jesus-fy it a little bit, which I found to be compelling as like a... as an artifact where it's like, these are literally, you know, conservative, Christian,
evangelical
filmmakers. Yeah. But they're like, well, let's make it God, not Jesus. Like they're still
operating
in that.
Well, that seems to be Kurt's thing too.
Yeah.
He wants to be, I think, a little bit more like a non-label Christian.
Sure.
Interesting.
I was trying to find a little bit of research about the real guy. And of course, the first thing you do is just whatever the guy's name is, Trump, to see what he said. He was...
Oh, Kurt Warner has said about Trump? Or
yeah.
What? Oh, okay.
And he was like a supporter, obviously. And he's on Lauren Boebert's Christmas cards or whatever for some reason.
Not surprising.
He also spoke out against Trump's criticisms of NFL protests. So Kurt Warner is pro-NFL protest people taking a knee. He said this is actually compatible with the ideals of... what's great about America and the right to blah, 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 da, da, da. So he's not totally just one thing, but he's a lot of what you would expect.
Yeah.
The other thing that's curious about this movie, what's funny about anytime you do based on a true story and you make it into a movie, is that sometimes the contours of real life are so weird and specific that when you put it into a fictional context of a movie, it feels strange. For example... the idea of a very brutal, like a very sad story of a child getting brain damage.
That was the wildest moment in the entire movie.
Insane.
That was the wildest moment.
So he meets Brenda, is played by Anna Paquin, who's explosion at the wig factory.
Has all kinds of hair. In
And she's saying, like, I have two kids. One of them's legally blind. He wasn't always this way. His father dropped him on his head when he was 4 months old. And obviously this kid, the man now exists in real life and he, you know, is a real son in person. But within the context, it's so shocking.
It's out of the blue. It's because it's like he's with their family, whatever, on the ground, like with the radio, whatever. Then he goes back to football, doing that, and he cuts back to this conversation. Mm-hmm. I mean, like mid, and you're just like, whoa. And I feel like I kept catching my face making the same face when it would cut to Zachary Levi, where it's just like deer in the headlights. like holy shit. There's just like, yeah. Dear Lord, you're dumping a lot of heavy stuff.
Whoa.
Out of the blue.
And then another story beat that I thought, oh, this, you know, this is only here because it did happen in real life, is when Brenda's parents are killed by a tornado, which is not funny.
Not funny.
But feels just so
Why are you guys laughing?
So,
we all laughing.
Hey, because it's so...
Pro-tornado over here.
I'm not pro-tornado. I do not stand behind tornadoes and their activity.
We but condemn
it is such a
tornadoes.
Like wild left turn. Yeah, it feels like a soap opera moment almost. Yeah. But again, it's like, this is a real thing that happened with this family.
You guys are hitting on the exact same thing I was kind of hitting on where it's like, or taking notes on. It's like, this movie read like a Wikipedia page where it's like, all of these things are true. This is real life. Cool. Movies aren't real life. Like, it needs to flow, have motivation, whatever. This is just like random beats that you're kind hitting on. That's like
their date.
Well, for me, it was the a trope that I hate. It was after the tornado and they die. And she's like, she's grieving. She's like, I just need some time alone. And then he saw that as the romantic time to like propose to her. And I was like, I always hate the moments when people are grieving and spilling their guts and it's met with like a makeout session.
I hate that. Like, that is not romantic. That's not kind.
You're not reading the
rules. It's always worked for me. I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, we'll talk later. But it's like that kind of moment. It's like, how did we get here so fast? And like, it just feels like we're bouncing around so quickly and nothing is connecting to each other really at all.
Mm-hmm. And I logically understand the stakes of his football career, but I can't say that I like felt anything, you know, when he gets the final spot. It's like, okay.
Because it feels so predestined in a way.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's one of the, especially when it's like, and it's Zachary Levi and in real life, Kurt Warner's a handsome guy too, where it's just like this brawny man who's like very conventionally handsome and looks like he is already a star quarterback, then becomes one. It's just such a...
It's like, can he do it?
It's such a funny... It's like from... It's not a rags to riches. I mean, I guess it literally is. And the low point is like he has to work at a grocery store. He has to stock the shelves.
The humility of that. But then, like, you see his friend at the end who still works at the grocery store being
stocking
like,
the magazines of him
it.
On the
I was
the
like,
thing.
This is tragic. Yeah. Like, because don't show this guy. Like, that's so sad.
It does a sports movie trope of, like, cross-cutting of, like, this person's watching it, this person's watching it. And it's just the guy in the grocery store.
They're nodding their head like,
I knew he would. Really did. That son of a bitch.
you do wish it would have stayed with the grocery store worker. And he turns the TV off after the game and just goes, my life is not good.
It's not good. I was in the same boat as this guy. And like now,
our
sad.
Lives have taken different paths.
Yeah. And now he's like, thank fucking God I never have to work at that grocery store again.
What a low point in my life.
I can't believe I didn't kill myself when I was working
there. He shouts that
out
at the Super Bowl speech. Like, there's this one guy, and he was nice, but woo, what a loser.
Thank God. I was so sad.
And then, of course, there's other... I'm trying to think of even what other things that... If you were watching it on mute, like at someone's house or at a bar, you wouldn't be like, oh, this is a Christian movie. If you had the sound on, you would when a POD song drops in the middle of a movie in 2021.
Yeah, my wife called boom. That. She was like, oh,
really?
Oh, there it is.
POD.
I didn't know they're a Christian group.
Yeah.
POD?
Which actually, I didn't know that.
Pale Blonde Death, baby.
Like, I was like, I didn't. I guess that's why they put it in there.
There was that, and we got My Life Be Like, ooh, ah. We got one of those.
There were some interesting needle drops. We were just like, what?
Okay.
Vince Gill singing the song over the credits like, love is good, or whatever he's saying.
I guess I was like, maybe if I was really into football, this movie would feel exciting.
No.
Okay, so
I'm into football, and it was not. I am into football, and I was not into it. I read like someone. I mean, it's like it wasn't about football, really. I guess, or I guess it kind of was. It's like you don't know what are we tracking? And so a lot of it was felt predetermined of like, if only they would just give me a chance, they would see that I'm great. There was a lot of like turmoil of like having to figure it out. the lamest kind of surface level kind of crap was like, you got to stay in the pocket, mm-hmm. which didn't make sense.
And didn't seem to be something he had to do anyway.
It didn't. And then it was dropped.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, I was like, okay, we've mentioned it three times here in the first 5 minutes.
I thought the pocket Joe was Montana, be so
he's
important.
Staying in the pocket. Like, okay.
Well, and you got coaches saying to him, like, you see adversity, and you run away from it every time. It's like,
where did that come from?
I don't think he ever ran
from
it.
True.
He seems like, to be heading head first into adversity.
That would have been interesting if that was the through line, not trusting stuff, and then like trying to bail on the family because it's too much. But that never happened. He was like Mr. Great Dad from day one. He, whatever. And then the only kind of blip of a thing was like, you're not throwing the ball fast enough. And I was like, okay, that's what we have to overcome.
I think it maybe wasn't even like, oh, can he ever come? It was more like he is just a virtuous man, and like the payoff of being a virtuous man and doing everything right is like eventually God will reward you with an NFL contract and millions of dollars and five more children.
Yeah. And I think, about that.
Oh, by the way, seven, for a Christian movie too, I was like, these two are moving in together. They're not married. It's kind of clear they had sex.
She took his shirt off.
They
cut right before.
Irwin Brothers.
Like a Hayes Code era.
Like, once
Hollywood
you're not a virgin
movie.
Anymore, it's like, it doesn't matter.
All the same. All covered by the same grace.
Yeah, it's all right.
I will say, when you assigned this movie, I was bracing myself of like, oh God, Christian movie, here we go, buckle up. And there wasn't really that much God in the movie.
Hardly.
I think I made a note that the first mention of God was about 25 minutes in.
Right.
And a lot of it was kind of, which I kind of appreciated more. Again, it felt kind of like another element that you were just whacked on the back of the head with out of the blue. But there were moments when like she's grieving in the bathroom and I was like, there was something there that I appreciate about the raw honesty and like anger of trying to wrestle with her faith in this.
Yes.
It's like, that's cool. But again, it's just kind of out of nowhere.
Yes.
And then we leave it and then it's gone. A lot of it's just kind of like hiccups on the road, but people... It's like you just touched it. It's like, okay, we checked that box. We hit that moment in my life because that really happened.
Yes.
And now it's on the screen. Okay, now let's go off.
And that's the thing I tell my friends or the youth group about.
Yeah,
I honestly
totally.
Feel like it would almost be more of an interesting movie of like what happened to him after he achieved all this success. Mm. Like when fame and money came for you, were you virtuous? When you had to sacrifice seeing your family to be at Christmas football game. The big one,
and
I know.
He just becomes a dick right after he experiences success.
Yeah,
or
you know, or like when people are now looking to you as an example, but you know your path was so unique and not replicable. You know, like that kind of thing might have been more interesting.
I wonder if they would have narrowed in on a moment or something like that. Because I felt like we were jumping. I mean, sometimes not fast enough, but sometimes it was like, whoa, okay, now I was just tracking her wigs that she was wearing. And I was like, okay, we're in a different place now.
Yeah.
Okay, something's happening. It's been a time jump.
So funny. And I think the kind of technical sloppiness of having a movie where it's like your character's the same the whole time and everyone catches up to him by the end.
Uh-huh.
I think it's reflective of an actual worldview of like, okay.
I've always been this guy.
Sure. Like whether you want to say like, well, if you're always virtuous, this is going to happen, or an evangelical Christian worldview on life is like an exclusive truth claim that everyone needs to like at some point recognize and pay fealty to. Mm. I think there's a way in which those like what might be technically sloppy story mechanics is actually evincing an ideology in some way. Where it's like, yeah, if you just kind of like bootstrappy Reagan era, you know, just keep working hard and it's,
don't change your mind.
And it's going to work out. Yeah.
Just work hard enough. That's the way to achieve it. That kind of American dream kind of idea where it's like, well, just you didn't work hard enough. You didn't get it. You didn't pray hard enough, or like really kind of hurtful ideologies. It's like, whoa, okay.
Yeah. Totally.
Also, I hope this doesn't sound like I'm making fun of a disability. I was floored by a movie in which a huge emotional beat was letting a legally blind child ride a lawnmower.
Yes. I did not. Can you guys? Why did that scene exist?
Like, no.
Why did this scene exist? I was watching it. I was like, what?
Is that like?
He told me he was ready.
Was so like, what? Okay, I forgot about that. So you brought that up. I was like,
it was
wait,
wild. She runs in like, oh my gosh. He's like, oh no. Yeah. He told
it's
me.
It's kind
he
of
was
like
ready.
When someone who's been wheelchair bound like finally takes their first steps, but it was a blind child.
It was
child
a 6-year old
driving a lawnmower.
Who, even if he had 20/20, probably should not be no driving a lawnmower.
And she's like, oh, you know?
And like, the scene was over. It was okay. Like a minute. You're like, okay.
We learned what we needed to learn.
Which was what? I didn't get it.
I don't know.
You just got to trust in
when
yourself.
When he's ready, he's ready.
Holy Spirit's taking the
oh
wheel right now.
Oh, my God. That was so crazy. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Good for you guys.
Well, for the sake of time, maybe we should give it a collective holy toast or roast or space between. You know how this works, Adam. Holy toast, we send it all the way to heaven.
Okay.
And it goes a little something like this. Holy roast, we send it all the way. Oh, we put it in purgatory, which is the space between. And Caroline will no, let's just do it. Let's make a collective decision. It's not atrocious.
It's not.
And it's not,
but it's not a toast.
No,
it's not
certainly
a toastess
not
either.
I will say, watching it, I think I was bracing myself so much. So expectations were at the floor.
Right.
So watching it, I was like, hey, it's watchable. I mean,
jumped
I guess
over that bar.
But it's like, yeah, it's not a good movie, but it wasn't like so bad that it was fun. It was just like kind of.
I think that makes it a roast for me.
Really roast?
Yeah. I mean,
because the
I'm
greatest
like,
sin is boredom.
It truly is. To make entertainment and to make it boring,
true.
I can't forgive you for that. And I'm like, again, good for Kurt and his family. I'm glad y'all are doing good, but I'm not going to read all that. Sorry that happened to you, or congrats.
Sorry for your millions, yeah, your millions and millions of dollars.
It does feel like a video that they would show at like a family reunion where it's like, yeah, this is for the family. That's nice.
For the family is absolutely how to catch. Yeah. And it was not for me. I don't know if I was better for it or whatever. I don't even think I would like believe in God more after seeing that movie. You know, it was
but
fine.
He said thank you after making the winning God touchdown. Yeah. He said thank
bumper
you
sticker on his success. I'm like, God did that.
Yeah.
If you guys want to do a space between, I understand, but I'm voting roast.
I was leading space between just because it wasn't atrocious, but it's not,
but it's not good.
That shouldn't be a pass because it wasn't the worst piece of crap ever.
Thank you for respecting the voting system of GCF enough, Adam, to be like, no, I can't do that.
I can't do it. Yeah, it's got to be a roast. Now, there's certainly deeper circles of hell that deeper things are in, but this was
first circle.
Yeah, we got a roast.
It'll be a toasty little roast. I'll make it unanimous. Motion carried. It's a roast from GCF. But hey, if you want to watch a 40-year-old Chuck lob a spiral, he's an old guy.
With the black dyed hair. Yeah.
I love the tight jeans contest photo. I thought that was fun.
When they meet at 24 and 25, like they're supposed to be 24 and 25 years old.
Yes.
I did. Okay. Before, and we're going to wrap it up, but I will say, I found a video interview with the actual husband and wife, Brenda and Kurt Warner.
Okay.
And she did say this about meeting Kurt.
Give me one with these three things: that he has a job, that he's faithful, and that he's ugly, so no other woman would want him. And that is the exact same time that I met Kurt. And he had nothing of what I was looking for. You know, I didn't know if he could be faithful because I didn't think that was a possibility.
Okay.
And he didn't have a job, and he wasn't ugly.
Throwing some stones.
I told God I want a loser that sucks.
My main impression of like is that Brenda was the cool one of this story, and that seems confirmed.
I did too.
She seems way more interesting than Kurt.
This is the rare occasion which, you know, watching the real life footage, I'm like, oh, she's more charismatic.
Yeah.
Packwin,
you can tell she's like funny and does cool shit.
Oh boy. Well, you know, let's bring the lights down in here, dim it, light the candles for a movie that should have been called Just American Dog. No wonder. Just a dog.
Classic mutt.
Adam, we're not here to plug ourselves or to promote our projects. We're here to lift them up to the Lord. And something we might be enjoying in secular culture. We'll start with Caroline real quick.
You can lift me up at Caroline's Farts. And this week, I'm going to lift up a podcast I was on I think it'll be out by the time this episode comes out. It's called Maximum Film. We talked about the movie Women Be Talking. It's called Women Talking. it was really fun. A couple friends of the pod runner, Ify Wadaway and Alonzo Duraldi. So give that a listen whenever you get a chance, and you'll have a great time.
Women do be talking.
They do.
Yeah.
And they
including
do a lot
Frances
in
McDormand.
That movie. It was good.
Yeah. I want to watch it.
Yeah.
Women Talking Rowdy screening at the Alamo Draft House coming soon.
Talk back.
All right. We turn to Adam.
Okay. So I'm promoting and I'm lifting up something else. That's
you're, yes.
Not
you're
me.
You're own,
lifting up
where
your
people
own
can
stuff.
Follow you.
We
and
don't
then,
use the word promote.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
That's prideful.
Well, I would like to shine a light on myself quickly.
Shine it.
If you are into video essays dissecting art and film. Actually, my most recent video I did was actually dissecting what Jesus really looked like and examining that with scripture and in art, but also in film, which is my forte in film, and trying to break down how a white Jesus can be like dangerous. And again, deconstruction. I'm going through it, guys.
Gotta do it. That's a great one.
Follow me on Entertain the Elk on YouTube. It's where you can find those essays. And I also have a podcast called Of Mice and Men and Monsters, where we take Dungeons and Dragons, kind of TTRPG elements, and drop them into worlds of classic literature. My wife is the Dungeon Master, and she is an English teacher, high school English teacher.
She's
by
the
day.
Best.
And so she's guiding us through these worlds. We've played through like Frankenstein and Moby Dick,
oh
Robin
God.
Hood. And we actually had Kevin, beautiful Kevin, guested most recently when we did the Christmas Christmas Carol.
It was so fun.
And he played
I had no
Scrooge.
Idea what I was doing.
Yeah, he did great. So if you want to hear
Have you
Kevin,
read that book?
No, I watched the Muppet one.
Exactly. That's all you need to see. So yeah, go listen to, again, it's Of Mice and Men and Monsters, and you can hear Kevin on, again, two recent episodes. They're standalone too, so you don't need
I truly had else. So much
you
fun
were great on it.
The
he played Ebenezer Scrooge, and it was fantastic.
And the first move I made was immediately wrong. I tried to play another character. They're like, no.
Can't do that.
Gently rebuked.
This is an improv.
Gently rebuked. No.
He did a great job.
That's so funny.
It was a lot of fun. If I'm going to lift up something else outside myself,
yes.
I am finally getting back to the movie theaters, and I got to lift up Alamo Draft House. Mm-hmm. It has my heart. I've seen like 5-6 movies there.
Oh, nice.
Recently. What's the recent one you've seen you liked?
I saw, my wife and I, Kate and I, we once saw Violent Night.
Oh, how was
the
that?
The Santa Claus one?
Yeah. It was Santa Claus Die Hard. You know what it was.
Fun.
But I also saw The Banshees of Inisherin, which is so good, but is just the saddest movie I've seen in such a long time. Mm-hmm. I'm glad Colin Farrell's getting some love because he is truly great.
They're rowing.
So go see movies. Go see good movies. Yeah. Not movies like this. American Underdog.
I think there's room for all movies in our America. You can lift me up at Kevin T. Porter on Letterboxd, Peloton, Instagram, OnlyFans. I'll lift up another Colin Farrell movie called After Yang, directed by the video essayist, speaking of video essays, turned director Kogo Nada, which I was just so impressed by. It's this gorgeous, delicate little sci-fi movie about love and grief and death, and it's so tender and so sweet and gorgeous to look at. It has a beautiful score, and everyone should check that out. And there's a big old dance sequence in it. Yeah, After Yang.
Is it about the presidential run?
Yeah, it's like what he does. Yeah. After Yang Gang.
Yeah.
I want to see. I heard it's like really small kind of sci-fi where it's like not a crazy post-apocalyptic,
cool.
But it's like very kind of small, like Eternal Sunshine, mm-hmm. where it's like a little element is sci-fi about
it. I thought it was so moving. I thought it was so, so good. So people can watch that. Lift us up at Christian Fun Pod everywhere and patreon.com/goodchristianfun and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and we'll donate $1 to charity. Adam, thanks so much for joining
Thank
us.
Thank you guys
buddy.
So much for having me.
Working
it was a
lot of
fun.
Babysitter to be here. Yeah, so nice.
Please come back anytime.
Yes.
It was a lot of fun.
Maybe
thanks for having
for
me
for a
on.
Movie heaven where we can talk about an actual movie.
Whenever you guys want me back, I'd be happy to be here. This was a lot of fun.
Hell yeah.
Thanks for being my therapist today, guys.
Anytime. Let's
absolutely.
Do it.
There's nothing left to say except for,
okay, I love you, Emma. Amen.
And let's go out with the, you know, the hit of 2023. Boom by
POD. A song
POD.
For this moment.
For this generation. All right, we'll see you next week. Goodbye. Madrid to Calabasas, Tijuana, Mexico, who the devil's in.
Tokyo. Say they know me though, cause I'll be putting in work. Commit my life to rebirth. Well respected, cause that's my word. And I'm sure you heard about a new sound.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.